I don't care if you're a garbage man or if you're a bum on the street or you're the executive at a company. It doesn't matter to me as long as you're the best that you can be. And for me, what that meant was I had to be the best. Not the best that I could be, but I had to be the best.
Welcome to the Disruptive Innovators Champions of Digital Business podcast, where IT and digital leaders from around the world talk about their careers, their inspiration, and their vision for the future of digital business. I'm your host, David Wright. The world of digital business is evolving faster than ever, and I want this to be a place where digital business champions create a village to band together and help each other navigate the ever-changing terrain. Disruptive Innovators features conversations with CIOs and digital leaders from around the world, diving into their personal backstory, career, their current role, trends they've been seeing, and their vision for the future, personally, professionally, and otherwise. This podcast is made for people who are seeing how quickly the digital business landscape is evolving, those who recognize that it takes a village of trusted advisors to navigate this ever-changing terrain, people who enjoy listening to high-level discussions surrounding what it means to be a leader, real-world examples of challenges faced, and industry-specific strategies leveraged to create exceptional business outcomes. This episode is brought to you by Disruptive Innovations, a leading tech consulting firm that helps enterprise organizations with their IT strategy, process optimization, and workflow improvement. Contact them and find out more at disruptiveinnovations.net.
Good morning, innovators. David Wright here, and I'm your host of the Disruptive Innovators Champions of Digital Business podcast. And today, this morning, I am lucky enough to be joined by my friend, Brad Sexton. Brad, pleasure to have you on, man. Thanks for making the time.
I appreciate it. I enjoy you spending some time and having the chance to chat.
Absolutely, man. So Brad, I know we got a couple chances to talk prior to this, but for those of our listeners who may not be familiar, can you just share a little bit about your current role?
Yeah, currently I'm the Chief Information Officer, CIO for Terribles. We're a Las Vegas-based company that is primarily known for convenience stores, gas stations, car washes in the Las Vegas area, but we're a pretty diverse organization. We operate quick serve restaurants, casinos, fuel distribution, slot routes. At one point, we had a commercial plane detailing company, off-road truck manufacturing company. So we're pretty diverse.
Yeah, I love the entrepreneurial spirit. Love the brand. I know we were talking about your CMO. So excited to talk a little bit more about the work you guys are doing at Terribles. I think everybody will benefit from that. But before that, and really to start the episode, we like to start with just one piece of actionable advice. If there was just one you'd look to leave everyone with today, what that might be.
I think that, and before we started, we had a chance to chat, and you were mentioning some of the things that you've had an opportunity to learn from these podcasts. And I think that for me, it's really, you never know where you're going to learn something from next, right? So whether it's the janitor walking down the hall, whether it's one of your new employees, or it's someone, you know, you've worked with for years and years, everybody has a different experience and they have a different view. And it's just, it's incredible where you're going to get the next piece of information that helps you with whatever the issue is, right? You had mentioned earlier in the piece before we started that things like imposter syndrome or speaking abilities or presenting and things like that. And I think for me, it has been early in my career, I was really focused on technical, right? Really making sure that I understood. I read everything I could read. I was always in finding new technical solutions for things. And that was the epitome of how things were done for me at that point in time. And what I've realized is there's so many more areas out there than just the technical piece of it, right? And I tell my team now, in a lot of cases, we're not doing a solution just for the solution's sake. It may be cool. It may be extremely elegant. But if it doesn't fit for what we're trying to do, we're not shoving a square peg in a round hole. And really listening and understanding and truly listening to people with their challenges, with their ideas. And I think the other part, the second part to that is, you don't have to be the one with all the ideas, right? I can't be. And that's that part of maybe the imposter syndrome or trying to figure out like how you're supposed to lead, making sure that if someone else comes up with it, give them the credit for it, right? They worked for it. They deserve it. It doesn't diminish you as a leader in any capacity, right? It actually helps that whole process, but it takes some time to get to that piece of it. And so I tell anybody coming up, just be patient with it. Listen to people. And let them tell you how to really continue to succeed.
Yeah. Oh, man, you said so much good stuff there. So it reminded me, like, as a technologist, learning the technical, being excited about these technical solutions, wanting to get it over the line, and early in my career having projects where people weren't consuming the technology because I didn't spend the time to actually enroll them in what we were doing and really properly follow kind of organizational change management protocols, enroll people in what we're doing. So definitely had that experience. And I love how you started things out too with just like, yes, I can learn things from anyone. And if I'm a humble leader, I think that for me, humility is a quality that I've grown to admire more and more of the leaders that I really appreciate the most. And I've got to, like we were talking about, talk to a lot of folks on this podcast. And these are guys and gals who are at the pinnacle of their career. They've built and sold companies. They're CIOs of enterprise brands, and they're still willing to learn. And I just really admire that. There was, and then we'll get into more of it. This is just such a good topic. There was a point in my life and my career where I realized that I was going through life and I was so far up my own asshole that I wasn't like, I was seemingly kind and engaging with people, but it was all about me. Everything revolved around me, and I wasn't really connecting with people. And I had this kind of life moment where I realized that, and it took me down a few notches, which is what I needed. I really needed that. And now when I go to the airport or I go to the coffee shop, it's like, how am I like really connecting with people? And I'll tell you, not only have I learned more, but it's made my life more fulfilling. I've got to show up for people in a moment. I remember there was this time when I was at the airport and there was this gate agent and she was having a bad day, and we ended up like talking about her child's name, and it like meant the sun in this different language. And it was just such a like, A, I had never heard the word said that way before, and B, it was such a lovely moment. And I think that just encapsulates that. But bringing it back to the workforce, right? Absolutely. My mom has always been a proponent. You got to hire people that are smarter than you. And I've made a point of that. And I'll tell people, CIOs I'm in a meeting with, I'm like, yeah, I'm talking to you, blah, blah, blah. And I got a bunch of people much smarter than me to help me do this work with you.
If you feel like you have to be the smartest person in the room, you failed already, right? And it brought back two very distinct conversations for me. So I had that same moment in my career where I'm young and I'm just getting into more senior leadership. I'm running a team for the first time, a fairly large, diverse team. And it was a contract for the government, and I was doing exactly what that contract said, right? You wanted this, and it's not what they wanted. It was too much change for them. And so I ultimately failed in that role. My boss at the time was awesome. And he came to me and said, we want to offer you a different role. This one isn't working. Very nice about it. I ultimately couldn't take that role because it was moving and couldn't do that. But literally walk through that last 2 years of what had transpired and how I had interacted and how the customer was unhappy with that interaction. But I was so frustrated and mad at him for so long that it was probably about 6 or 7 years. And I still talk to him. That's probably 6 or 7 years later that he was in town and we sat down to have a drink. And I sat down with him and I'd been rolling this through my head for years and finally hit me. I failed. It wasn't somebody else's fault. It wasn't the contract. It wasn't the customer that set the expectations incorrectly. I failed. And once I had accepted the fact that it was my failure and how do I not have that happen again, I sat down with him and I bought him a drink and said, thank you very much. You, in that moment, helped me. It took me years to get past it, but you laid the groundwork for helping me get to, I'd have never got to where I'm at right now without that interaction, without that moment. And I have a tendency when we're in conversations and I'm like, okay, I know the answer. I know the answer. I know the answer. I know what I want to do. And I always try to remember that moment with him to come back to really listen to the rest of it. Cause sometimes I'll have this tendency to tune out. I'm like, okay, I hear you. And I know that's not going to work, but I'm trying to let them communicate their issue. And one of the things that as a leader, you're trying to help people see things from a bigger perspective. Right? I have a very talented individual that works for me right now, and he is really wants to grow his career. One of the things that I'm working on with him is in these situations saying, okay, what about these other pieces? You're going down this path and you're going down a path because it's this wide from what you're, if you look this way, you may come up with a different answer. And I don't want to tell him what to do. At the same time, I want to help him figure out, okay, widen your scope, think a little bit, start thinking about things from a different perspective. And as you throw those pieces and those situations out for him, I can see him mulling on it and coming through. And then the next conversation, there's a little change, right? And so you can see that piece of it. And I'll never forget that moment. And really helps. It helps me let my ego get out of the way. Because that's one of the, you had mentioned the same thing, right? You're all up your own ass. For me, it's my ego and right, it's me and I want. And there's a part of that is one of the keys to helping me be successful, but there's a balance with it. One of the jobs I had in the last decade or so was I worked for a restaurant group, a nightlife and restaurant group. And working with bartenders and servers and people who are really truly interacting from a customer service perspective day to day and the front lines of that and take a lot of abuse. Really take a lot of abuse because people tend to look down at them. They're just the server. They're just whatever the case may be. And really realizing just how difficult it is for them to do that job and to stay positive and to continue to have that positive customer service interaction is a tremendous skill. Absolutely incredible. And it really, for me, was one of those two kind of defining moments for me to realize, look, you are no better than anybody else. I don't care what your stature is. I don't care how much money you have. I don't care what position you have or where you are in life. No one's any better than anybody else. And if you just stop and listen, it's incredible what you'll learn. I've learned so much in terms of how to deal with people by just watching janitors and servers and other people in those capacities. And it comes back to what you asked me in the first place. And for me, it's a constant challenge, right? There's an old bluegrass song, say constant struggle. And that's exactly what that is for me is, you know, get out of my own way. Let people help who really can help.
Yeah. And it's, I heard in what you said, having empathy with my colleagues.
That's my wife for me. I would not be nearly as empathetic as I am now if it weren't for her. And she does the exact same job I do, right? It's an interesting dynamic, but I learn from her so much all the time. She's such an incredible leader.
Yeah. And then you also got me thinking about how, about acceptance and how I had to learn as an entrepreneur. So we're scaling 4X last year, we're rocking and rolling. I can only control what I can control. Truly. And I got to keep my side of the street clean and do the next right thing and then let go. Because if I try to worry about everything else that I can't control, I'm going to drive myself bananas. And the last thing I'll say, just because you said so many good things, you got me thinking with what you're saying early on about one of the first, it was like, I don't know, 5, 6 years ago, something like that. It was one of the first big health systems we worked with on a CX project. And we had built this consulting module on ITIL best practices, and all I had consulted with research groups and other CIOs, and this thing was, it was mint, it was ready to rock. And we got into this health system that we really shouldn't have been working with. They were very big. I shouldn't say shouldn't be working with, but we got a look that we wouldn't have otherwise gotten if we didn't know someone. So we did great work. We did great work, and we came up with this roadmap, and it was beautiful. And we're like, this is what you got to do with this. And this is this like whole advisory board of people, executives, IT, digital. And some of the folks knew what we were talking about, and a lot of them had no idea what we were talking about. It was like we were talking Chinese, and we just kept pushing it. And months later, we finished the deliverable, and we were disengaging because we had done what we were contracted to do. And the CIO came to me. And this guy was a piece of work, really old school. And we had like a love-hate relationship. It was like my vice principal in high school, because I was a bad kid, but I was smart. So we had this like really interesting dynamic. And he was like, but I respected him very much. And he was like, David, you didn't meet us where we were at. And I was like, whatever. And like, it took me some time to let that soak in, because I was like, we did everything. We know what you need. It was like I wanted to shake him and be like, wait, just let us pull you across the line. But you can't do that.
That's hilarious. And I've learned from my years, one of the phrases I would use is, you can come along nicely, you can come along kicking and screaming. Either way, you're coming along, right? This train's going this way. And that doesn't work. Some people, you'll nudge them to get on the train and move forward. Some of them, you'll nudge to get off the train, right? And that's okay too. But the rest of them, you get this stoic resistance. And if you would have just come to them where they're at and help them understand why we're going down this train and how it's impactful for them in their position and their role and their responsibilities, and what it means, like it's the stepping stone to get to the next place. Like you said, you had that roadmap and this is where you need to be, but we're back here and you didn't help us go from where we're at to where you want us to be. I get where you want us to be, but if we don't have the path to get there, it doesn't help us. And yeah, that's incredible. But having not gone through it, how do you explain that to someone in a meaningful way? Right? You give them examples and you talk about it, but the first time someone says something to you like that, and then it takes you a while to replay all of those interactions and all those conversations and go, damn, okay.
It was so impactful. And ultimately for them, because they brought in a different consultant after we had left, and they had actually been engaged with them previously. So they just continued the work with them, and they were mainly concerned about money. Initially, I remember a partner that was still involved in the deal kind of showed us some of the stuff they were doing. And it was like, to us, it was like 1 + 1 = 2. And we were like, oh my God, like we could have done this. And it was just because we weren't listening enough, or perhaps we weren't asking the right questions. We thought we knew. And so anyway,
yeah, I was telling you about the individual on my team that is very hungry and really wants to continue to grow. And there's another gentleman that I've known for a few years that I brought in to help. And both those individuals, one of the things that I'm trying to help them broaden their experience and stuff, but one of the things I've said to them is there's no substitute for experience. I can give you all kinds of information. I can help you in certain situations. But having that experience and having been in that spot in one way, shape, or form previously, you can't replicate that. It's impossible to replicate it. And so sometimes you said about the scaling and not being able to control stuff. I've tried to articulate to my leaders, look, you have to let go of the details, right? You will not succeed in your role or even any higher if you have to hold the iron grip on every single piece of it. And when that's how you got to the point that you are, it's hard to say, okay, well, this is what's made me successful to where I'm at right now, but I have to stop doing that to be more successful. That's incongruent. It doesn't make sense. Yeah. And helping show those individuals, you can only do this much, and I'm expecting you to do this. This is what the role is, right? And if you try to control every single piece of it to get to that, you're going to fail. And the real knowledge is understanding when you can let your team potentially fail. They need to fail in some capacity. It just can't be the most critical item on your plate. My wife's expression is, your job is to spin plates and to know which ones can fall. You don't let the ones who can't fall. The other ones, if something's going to fall, let them fall. And knowing which one is the right one, that's the real secret to figuring out. And you don't get that without experience and understanding the organization that you're in. I've always said there's an organizational chart, and then there's the way things get done. And there's lots of people in that organizational chart that make decisions that don't fall in the organizational path that you would think that they would, right? And because they have influence in one way, shape, or form or another. And you have to recognize that pretty quickly. Otherwise, you will get lost in that political maelstrom.
Yeah. I mean, this is just such a great conversation. I got to like keep this thread going. And so when you're talking, it got me thinking about innovation. Because when you talk about, hey, we got this far, we were successful, willing this forward. Like I identify with that so much as an entrepreneur, because you have to do that initially, especially starting as a solopreneur. It's all you have is your grit and your drive and your will. Innovation, a new idea or method or device, the introduction of something new, innovational, ability to conceive, develop, deliver, scale, some new idea, creation of something new. You have to, like that, going from there to there, that's innovation. Like you need to do more with less. You need to do something new. You need to be able to fail in a calculated way. And it's funny, there was a post the other day from a colleague, another CIO that I really admire, and he was talking about like the biggest enemies to innovation or something like that. And it got me thinking about another recent customer where there was an executive who oversaw one of these particular groups, and they ruled by iron fist. It was like, we need this yesterday. We need to get it done. So very, very similar to that kind of attitude, right? And I feel like if you're successful in your career and you've gotten to the place that you're at as an executive, you probably know what we're talking about right now, right? Odds are. And maybe you're not like that anymore, but you probably were at one point, especially if you were born pre-1990. But anyway, I digress. So we had to really unwind this because people were used to getting these directives and needing to act, and we need it by yesterday. And it was just like that constant urgency where everything's on fire. And people were afraid. They were afraid to make a mistake. And then when you get into these innovative projects where you're shifting how we do things technologically, you ultimately need to shift how we do things operationally. And in healthcare, potentially even clinically as well, you need to, in my experience, be able to make these little decisions, seemingly little decisions, throughout the course of the project that ultimately amount to this new reality, this new platform, this new way of operating. And if people are afraid to make those little decisions, it creates, I guess it's obvious, it creates immense delay. You can't innovate like that. It just doesn't work. And I was talking to a colleague down in Florida who's about to bring us in yesterday about how sometimes we act as a therapist to businesses where we're just literally like putting our arm around them and we're having conversations like this. Because, and Rachel Lockett, she's out of Minnesota, she'll say this, the technology works. If I design it properly, redundantly, etc., I can get 5.9s. It'll work. The rest of it, that's the tricky part.
Yeah, it's the operational piece of it. And it's funny you said this, if you're born before 1990, it's on the first thing that was triggering for me is, you're absolutely right. When you talk about like my generation or a generation before that, we're called latchkey kids. And you had to do this on your own because there was no one else around. And so, you know, my dad, who was born in the 40s, I can't tell you how many times my dad said, I don't care what you do, just be the best that you can at what you do. Whatever. He said, I don't care if you're a garbage man or if you're a bum on the street or you're the executive at a company. It doesn't matter to me as long as you're the best that you can be. And for me, what that meant was I had to be the best. Not the best that I could be, but I had to be the best. I tell this to my wife, and sometimes she just turns her head to me and is like, I don't know, you're just crazy. And it's, I have a competitive peace building. It is just ingrained. It's part of my DNA. And for me, it's not whether I win, it's not losing. And there's a difference. For me, there's a very specific difference. I could win and that's great, but it's more about not losing. Right? It's hard to articulate that piece, but that's part of the reason why it was so difficult for me initially in my career, being able to have to let go and make those smaller decisions and say, okay. And then when you get to that point, do you realize that and you have to make those decisions? You're like, okay, here's where we are. Here's where we need to be. And the rest of people don't necessarily, you know, that's one of the reasons why we're in these roles, is because we can see that end game, right? And that strategic and that bigger picture of where we need to go. And it's those little decisions to say, okay, we're going down this path right now. Here's the goal over here. We're going down this path. Okay, how do I incrementally widen your vision a little bit to see a little bit over here and narrow it here, right? And so I'm just turning that boat, right? And it takes time, and it takes those little interactions every single time, and have to think about it and go, okay, you don't, but I can get you a little closer. And every time I get you a little closer, we're making progress. And sometimes that's frustrating, especially for someone like me who really wants, okay, I can see it. Let's, and just like you were talking about your project, here's where you need to be. Come on, let's go. Left turning. Left turning. We're there. Come on. It's right there. But if they don't see it, right? If they don't understand and they don't see it, they're never going to get there. I had a conversation with one of our executives the other day, and we have this homegrown application that we've used for 20 plus years. That's the bane of my existence. If I could turn it off today, I would turn it off and do the office party with the bats and take the hardware out and just destroying it. But it's ingrained in our operations, and it's critical to the way that we operate right now. And there's another executive of mine that we're really trying to change that culture, but it's little pieces at a time. But I was talking to this other executive, and he was telling me, like, I have a staff member on my team that's primarily responsible for this application, right? And he is communicating with a staff member, and English isn't her first language, and she's an extremely bright and capable individual. But communications and understanding, it's the first time she's been in this industry at the same time. And so understanding all the different pieces of it and how part of it. And so his communication, so, you know, I had to kind of step in and say, okay, let me help with this conversation. And so I was having this conversation with him. It's been about 6 months now, and said, hey, I feel like the interactions and the way that we're addressing your concerns with this application and stuff is going better, right? It's not where we want it to be yet. We're still making progress on it, and there's all kinds of other challenges with that. But it feels like that just the communication piece and the understanding of what you're asking us to do and what we're delivering is getting better. And he goes, absolutely, I think so too. But he goes, he's telling me he thinks that's because of me being able to bridge I can't speak your technical language. And so sometimes he goes, I have a difficulty trying to articulate, this lady's name is Liana, to her about what I'm asking her to do and getting it to a point where she understands what I'm trying to say. I said, I think that's 50% of my job. 50% of my job is translator, right? If I can't translate the technical piece to business outcomes and to the rest of my peers, like, we're all business leaders. My wife did a presentation about a year ago. It's not IT and the business, it's just the business. And I love it. And I'll steal it every chance I get, because it's so insightful to say, we are all business leaders. And 15 years ago, when IT didn't have a C-level position and they weren't at the table of the companies. And we fought so hard to get there. And then we get individuals that get up there in that role and then they alienate their peers because they can't communicate with them. One of the things that I've, for me, for my wife and I actually, we thought about going back to school. So we both have our bachelor's degree and thought about going back to school and okay, what do we want to do with a master's degree? And you know, I looked at her and said, I have no desire to do a master's degree in anything technical. I've already got a bachelor's degree that's in information systems management. It's not the technical side, it's the business side. And so going back and getting an MBA where you can really start learning the rest of it, and it's where we'd be progressing as a career anyway, in terms of being able to have those communications and communicate business outcomes from an IT perspective. It's exactly what marketing people do, business outcomes from a marketing perspective. It's the same thing for our retail operations. I told you, convenience stores and gas stations, right? The people, the individual that's responsible for that function, right? He's got to articulate exactly what he's doing from his perspective, you know, bottom line outcomes, whatever measurement you want to use from it, right? And so that's absolutely critical to being able to take that next step as well, right? And so, like for me, I'm about 3/4 of the way done with an MBA program. I've got 4 classes left, and I'll finish that in the next month or two because I can do it at an accelerated pace. They can do it as you go, but it's just reinforcing that piece that I realized that earlier in my career is like, if I can't communicate with you and that go back to the conversation with the executive, that's exactly my job, right? If I can't do that, I'm in the wrong role, or you've got the wrong person in that role, because that's what's necessary at that level.
Yep. No, 100%. Wow. So this has been awesome, Brad. I want to talk a little bit more about Terribles in particular. Before we do, I always just like to ask a favorite book or literary piece. It could be even a podcast, but like something that you've been reading, either that you've read historically that like always stood out to you, or that you've been reading recently, just anything you might share with us or that you've been listening to.
You mentioned this when we talked earlier, and I'm not a huge book reader. That's not, at least not like business type stuff or whatever. I will tell you that one of the things that has been extremely impactful to me is I had an opportunity early in my career to meet an individual that is just larger than life. It's General Colin Powell. And I was working for the government, and he at the time was a 3-star general, and he was walking through the areas and learning about stuff, and just seeing him in person, and you could feel the change in the room when he walked in. And it was extremely powerful. He commanded that room without commanding anything. And having that kind of ability, and it was awe-inspiring for me, especially as a young professional. I was in my late 20s at the time. And I've always kind of watched him through his career, and he's got 13 rules, but one of the ones that just, and that when you talk about a literary document, it's probably that document, right? That's probably the one that is the most mantra, whatever, for me. And there's one of them in there. I think it's number 2. He's like, sleep on it. It'll be better in the morning. And I find that people talk about in other ways, yeah, write your email and then save it and come back to it later, right? Because you don't want to send it that first time when you're mad, or you're frustrated, or you're whatever. That's bit me a few times before. The other one, and I learned this from a gentleman that I worked with in my last job, he would put something in the email address, like just @... something that would force you to not be able to send the email. It forced you to break your habit of typing, what's it, control enter, bam, gone. And you couldn't send it because you had to, and he'd do that every single time on any kind of a message like that. And it forced him to, oh, wait a minute, let me read through this here. Let me take a second back and break that habit. And so, yeah, so the answer to your question is probably Colin Powell's 13 rules of leadership is probably the one that's been the most impactful for me.
That's a huge one. I talk to my guys about that all the time, the young guys, the pause button, right? Where if I'm reacting from my first thought or emotion, like it's probably not, it very well may not be the right thought or emotion to react from. So stepping away from an email, not reacting in the moment, just like taking a breath, and I can pray and meditate on it. I can talk to colleagues and my kind of like advisory board. I can bring it to a leader. I can bring it to a mentee. Nothing, 9 out of 10 things do not require an immediate reaction unless the world is on fire. In IT, we have those situations where you, of course, you have to act with immediacy, but most of the time I don't. And that's a very important skill for that I had to learn as well. So that's a good one. So we got a little time left, Brad. So talk to me a little bit more about Terribles, maybe your vision for things and maybe some of the key initiatives that you guys are working on. Because I was super impressed by the brand. I spoke in Vegas a couple weeks ago and I passed a couple Terribles logos and I was curious. And then I saw the website. I was like, oh, this is cool. And then I was like, wow, they do all these different things, and which I imagine makes your life probably a little bit more complicated, if I had to guess, just because it's a lot of different competing priorities, fundamentally different business types, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tell people when people ask about it, I say, let me just give you an example. We have 5 different point of sale systems across all of our different lines of business, and I may be able to consolidate it down to a couple of them. We're working on two other ones to phase out and standardize them. But I will never get past at least 3. It's just not going to happen in our environment. And that's one of those, I can't do the same thing for all of them, right? So scaling for me is limited in some capacity by the vertical that it's in. But it's funny you say that. You're in Vegas. We have roughly 135, 140 convenience stores, gas stations, and car washes in the Las Vegas area. You could probably go down one corner and see one on both sides, right? If you're right off the strip and you go down Russell, cross over the freeway going west, there's one on either side of it, right? And that's not the only example of it, but that's one right there. So we are very, very prominent in the Las Vegas community. And as a family-owned business, it does a couple of things, right? It gives us a very entrepreneurial attitude, right? And so we are very fast paced. We want to look at something, see if it works. If it does, great. If it doesn't, then okay, let's reset and try again, right? I told you about the commercial claim detailing company, right? That was born out of a necessity on our own side. We're like, hey, maybe we can make a little money on it. Maybe it can offset some of the costs of some of the things that we have to do with it anyway. And then quickly realized maybe not. Maybe it's not the most efficient way. We don't know a lot about commercial plane detailing. That's not our forte, but we're willing to try lots of different stuff. At the beginning of the conversation, I told you a little bit about the organization. One of the things that I mentioned real briefly, and one I didn't, is we own and operate a commercial parking garage. And IT actually ran that commercial parking garage for a long time, because we knew the system that was put in place and it didn't fit operationally in any one of our other verticals. And so we just operated it for the first 8 months or so, 8 months of me saying we shouldn't be operating this, but we did. And we still are very engaged in that project, but that's one of the great things about the organization. Flip that same coin. And on the other side of you're like, really, a commercial plane detailing company? What am I going to do with that? How am I going to support? I have no idea what you need from a support perspective, right? So I'm having to learn that whole piece as well. So you flip that coin and people are amazed. They have this conversation. They're like, holy cow, that's crazy that you guys will get involved in all these different kinds of things. And they say, what about doing something like this? Like, please don't. If our owners hear about it and it starts an idea, they'll try it. And I joke around with that because that's one of the things that makes us very unique. Our slogan is deliberately different. And we actually operate that all the time. You walk into one of our convenience stores compared to a typical Circle K or 7-Eleven or some of the other ones out there, like a Buc-ee's or a Casey's or a Quick Trip and some of these other competitors. And you'll notice 2 things probably very quickly. One, it's in Nevada and there's gaming, period, right? That's part of our state. The other piece of it is that there are digital media signs throughout the entire site.
on average, and we vary in sizes in terms of our convenience stores and stuff. We vary in sizes from 1,200 square foot, very small, not very large environment, to 10,000, 20,000 square foot. We have one in Jean, Nevada, just before I'm going south towards California on I-15, just before you get into California. It's the largest Chevron branded gas station in North America, 96 gas pumps. So it's huge. And inside of it is two separate quick serve type of offerings. You can take a picture with a Sasquatch. There's a alien spaceship there, right? It's very Nevada type themed. And we have this great dichotomy of size and shape. But in that particular one, I think that we counted the other day, it's like 80 TVs. And we're not talking small ones. They're at a minimum, they're 55 inch all the way up to 85 inch TVs. But on average, it's somewhere in the 20 displays. And whether it's giving you an ad for one of our products or one of our promotions, the same thing happens in unaware dispensers, right? Most people have this experience, right? You go to fill up your gas and all of a sudden some video starts playing. 9 times out of 10, that video is being driven by a company called Gas Station Television, right? And it's national brands. That's that marketing and advertising piece. We don't use that. We build our own marketing. We have our own promotions. We do our own videography. And so you'll see things like an ad for one of our local casinos or one of our promotions that Game Day Giveaway, right? Which is where we partner with either the Golden Knights or the Las Vegas Raiders, right? So ours is very localized in that piece. And as technology changes, like being able to continually deliver and move to different new and different kinds of platforms to maintain that same kind of functionality has been a challenge. We're in conversations now with the company that we're using because they've got a new product and they're trying to phase out their old marketing platform. And we go over and back up and say, I need feature parity. And I get it. They're looking at us saying, no one else uses that functionality. I said, then why did you build it? You built it to be used. We're using it. So don't penalize us for using the technology that you built for your customers to use just because other people don't. So we work very closely with them and they're a great partner, but right, we just delivered a new product from them in our lab to be able to test this environment. And it also means the technology in the dispensers themselves. Right? People look at that and go, it's a pump. It's a very sophisticated pump. I mean, a lot of requirements for making sure that it's dispensing correctly, that there's no other items in that fuel. There's no water in it. There's nothing else that gets in it. There's all kinds of other pieces to it. From a technological perspective, that's a big one for us. And really engaging in our communities. I guess one of the things that we're very proud of, we have a scholarship that we fund for UNLV students. Those types of things really are the part when we say we're deliberately different. If you go look at, I don't know if that's the latest one, yeah, I think it is the latest one. If you go watch one of the latest Spider-Man movies, there's a scene in Las Vegas and you'll find, I'm pretty sure it's Venom on the top of a Terabers convenience store, right? But because of that variety, right? I mentioned that we have casinos and we have slot routes and we have other customers that we maintain. That technology is significantly different. And you know what? We're spending 7 figures this year to upgrade that technology again with that partner of ours, a different partner, but a partner of ours, to really build out new capabilities. And so being able to provide an environment that one of my goals is to be able to provide a very stable, flexible, and easily changeable environment so that when our chief marketing officer says, hey, I got an idea. I want to go do this. And I'm like, okay. It may take a little tweaking here and there, but we can do that because we built this flexibility to be able to do that. And one of the biggest things for us, and I told you about earlier, is this home learn application analytics. And I was on the panel last week in Chicago and we were talking about innovation and this kind of stuff. And one of the things that we're talking about is when there was a report that came out about the industry and kind of some of the things that were happening and changing in it. And people use this term all the time, data is king, right? And I stopped for a second and I said, I would change that just a little bit. And I'd say actionable data is king.
because I can give you all kinds of information. If it doesn't help you make a decision better or faster, it means nothing, right? And so that's, so for me, one of the huge areas that we're working through, not only engaging our customers in a more meaningful way and being able to provide more value to them in that interaction from a technology perspective, it is also the back end building this platform that allows us to truly connect all of our disparate systems that we have. Our legacy tech as well, right? People call it tech debt. You can now call it lots of different things. But over the course of 65 years, we've built a technology infrastructure, and some of it is not as modern as it could be or is available, but that's what we have. And we talk about meeting people where they're at. That's the infrastructure I have. So now how do I take that infrastructure? And in some cases, maybe it is a forklift upgrade, and right, you're just like, okay, I just got to, I can't do anything else with it. But there's so much innovation now in technology that there are platforms out there now that allow you to really connect all of these disparate systems in whatever way that they were built to connect to, whether it's an API, whether it's connecting directly to a database, whether it's flat file integration, whatever it may be, that you can now connect and use this platform to build. It's like that unifying layer. And I explained it to my executives, this unified data layer, right? If I can give this unified data layer that allows you as the end customer for me to be able to get pieces of information from all these disparate systems and put them together in a way that's meaningful to you in your role at the time you need it, then that I'm successful. And that's one of the big pushes that we're doing. And for lack of a better term, digital transformation, it means something to somebody, everybody, different ways. It gets overused in a lot of ways. But fundamentally, if you think about it, that's absolutely the path that I'm taking us and my organization is taking us through in terms of building this environment that allows us to really be truly flexible. Then I'm not worried about the next new business that we start up, or because I'm like, okay, fine, I connected in here and I can fairly quickly build, extrapolate the analytics and give you information as the operators that you need, right? And or that the next crazy idea that our chief marketing officer comes up with, because at the end of fourth quarter every year, he and his team are sequestered and you're just like, oh, damn, what are you going to come up with next? A friend of mine that's a CISO here in Las Vegas, and I worked for him for a while. And when I was thinking about transitioning and looking for the next opportunity, I sent several people a message and he was one of them. Said, hey, I'm going to look for something new. And if you know something, at the time I was a chief information security officer. And I said, I want to stay in the local area. And I know that it may not be a C-level position, but I'm okay with that depending on the role. And he writes back to me, goes, I have an idea. And this is the kind of friend that you have. You're like, damn. But you got to hear it because you never know what it's going to be. And I still look up to that individual in a lot of ways. But that's the kind of thing, right? Where you're like, I need to hear that different perspective, that different take on stuff. And so I talk about that unifying layer. I think I found a platform that's going to be able to help us with that piece of it. And I'm literally having a conversation with one of my peers later this week, tomorrow, as a matter of fact, and I'm going to present this to him. He's the person who's part of our revenue management and analytics team. He leads that team. And so this is something that would mean significant, but it's also a risk for him because of the thing in place, that it may replace the tool that he's using right now. And so now I've got this, right? Now we've got this relationship piece that we have to work through. And I don't want him to feel like I'm trying to step into it. I just want to give him all the tools to help him be able to be. And that's the way I need to articulate this to him. And we have a really good working relationship. And so I know I can have that conversation with him, but it's a risk at the same time, right? Because everybody has their own area. And you're like, okay, this is mine. And I'm responsible for it. Even if I want to work with other people, and it's still my responsibility. I had a conversation with one of my guys and they sent an email and said, asking our customer about upgrading a computer or whatever. That's not their decision. That's ours. You take that and you own that decision. You have a conversation with them about options and things like that, but it's not their decision because we have to maintain it and operate. As long as it meets the requirements for them to do their job and to use, that's the part of the conversation that they need to be a part of. It's very exciting times for us right now. And I'm very excited about this, these kind of changes and the strategic direction that we're going as an organization. I really do think that over the course of the next 12 to 36 months, we're going to be a completely different company than what we were when I started 24 months ago. I'm 1 week over 2 years into this journey with this organization. And I just see even more and more opportunities for us to continue to grow and to continue to get better. And that's going to leverage for us as an organization, that's going to leverage efficiencies within the organization. And that efficiencies now allow us to expand and continue to keep that same footprint, right? From a cost perspective or from an overhead perspective. And so again, it's business outcomes, right? How do you leverage that technology and our environment? I spent time with the military. The term that the military likes to use is force multiplier, right? And that's exactly what we're doing, right? Is building this platform to allow us to do more with less, to be able to have greater capabilities faster. Our ownership comes down and says, takes us this many days right now to get financial information out, right? If it's this many days, I need it to be this many days, right? I need to make decisions faster. And if I'm making decisions 60 days based on information that's 60 days old, I've already lost the battle, right? And so that's where it's incumbent on me and our organization to really fulfill that requirement. There's a lot of pressure on that, right? And there's a lot of responsibility. And I take that very seriously. And there's days that you're just like, you're frustrated. And then my wife and I will look at each other and say, on your worst day, are you still happy at what you're doing? And the answer every single day for me is yes. And as long as that's the case, I'm going to continue to do what I'm doing.
What a gift. I feel the same way, man. Not everybody gets that. Yeah, truly blessed. But I know you've clearly worked really hard to get to that position, and it takes hard work. It takes, in my experience, being a lifelong learner, taking your lumps and learning from it, all of that, which we've come full circle on this morning. Yeah, Brad, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. I do like to end every episode with just a question. If you could go back 5, 10, 15 years, what advice would you give your younger self?
Relax. Give yourself some time. You don't have to have the answer every single time right now. Just be a little patient. I need to tell myself that even now.
I know. But it's a daily thing for me. It's not now we're enlightened. It's all a practice. Brad, thank you so much, man. I learned so much today. Really appreciate having you on.
So you got to end with one question. Can I actually end with one question?
Absolutely.
You started this conversation by saying that these conversations for you, you've learned so much and taken away out of that. What's the one thing you would say that you learned out of these conversations that's helped you the most?
Wow. So out of all the podcast episodes, for me, a huge part of it goes back to one of the consistent threads throughout this episode, which is like the humility of it all. And I don't have to have all the answers. And the fact that, yeah, the leaders that I respect and admire the most, they've learned how to lead and not manage. And I think there's like a distinct difference there in being able to touch, move, and inspire folks to change versus demanding that they change or just asking that they change. How am I, like I said, really inspiring that change? And then I would say also just the control aspect has been another huge thing for me, because the more that I started focusing on the things that I can control. And I'll also say another thing that I really learned is my personal development and my emotional intelligence and all of that has been pivotal in leveling up as an executive, right? So my personal development is part of my professional development, right? And the more that I was able to have fun with it and not have that such a tight grip, the more success I had, You know, it was almost like an inverse relationship between what I was doing and these kind of revelations I've been able to have in doing this work. I mean, this is like it's a perfect episode to encapsulate this. I appreciate the question, and I'll end with this. I mentioned that executive I was talking to yesterday, that chief consumer officer, and that just that whole conversation and what it meant to me. And it reminded me of this line that this expression I had a number of weeks back, which is, the older I get, the more that I learn, and the less I realize I know. That's it for me. And I really appreciate the time, Brad.
Yeah, me too. I enjoyed it, David. Thank you so much.
And to our listeners, thank you all for tuning in. And we will catch you all next week.
Thank you for listening to the Disruptive Innovators Champions of Digital Business podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and subscribe to enjoy future episodes. This episode is brought to you by Disruptive Innovations, a leading tech consulting firm that helps enterprise organizations with their IT strategy, process optimization, and workflow improvement. Contact them and find out more at disruptiveinnovations.net.